First of all, your research is focused on rural lesbians as opposed to gay men. Why is that?
So I guess a few reasons. One is that I'll back up and just say a little bit that there's a body of scholarship that's known as queer theory, and there's various veins or subfields within queer theory, such as transnational queer studies, queer of color critique, or rural queer studies. And the scholarship on rural queer lives, people, issues has predominantly focused on the South and in the US, and has predominantly focused on gay men. So there's essentially very little scholarship on women. There are no monographs on...
Carly, I'm sorry, there's no what?
Yeah, there are no monographs. So there are no books that look specifically at the issue of LGBTQ women in rural places, though there are books that focus on men, gay men in rural places. So I was trying to, one, expand upon this body of scholarship to consider a region and a group that have really been ignored by both gay rights activists and by LGBTQ scholars. And then the other thing is that my work is really about gay visibility, and there's some other scholarship that suggests gay men and lesbians relate to ideas about visibility in different ways. And so I was trying to explore that by focusing specifically on what LGBTQ identified women in rural places can add to broader conversations about LGBTQ visibility.
Okay, there's two thoughts going on there. One is how gay women and gay men deal with visibility, as you said. And the other thing is how rural and urban gay people in general deal with visibility. Can we start first with the misunderstanding that you have found in how maybe even gay rights activists view rural life, and how a lot of folks consider rural people to be less tolerant than urban people, even enlightened mm-hmm. people?
Yes, that's precisely correct. So I interviewed 51 people women in rural South Dakota and rural Minnesota. And for the most part, people express that they feel really supported, really welcome, really affirmed in the place where they live, in rural South Dakota and rural Minnesota. This is not to say that there's no bigotry or no other, major social problems in these areas, including racism and sexism. But the women who I interviewed mostly said they haven't experienced homophobia and that they feel really connected to being from a rural place. And in fact, some of them also mentioned that they feel in many ways disconnected from LGBTQ activism in ways that they do not feel disconnected from their rural communities. And this is in part, I think, because of the ways in which the rural has been produced by LGBTQ activists, and because the kinds of goals and desires and discourses that circulate through gay rights spaces and through LGBTQ urban people and the movements in those places, they rely on, well, a couple of things. They rely on particular understandings of the rural, again, and they have different goals. And rather than think, oh, maybe LGBTQ visibility looks different in rural places, or maybe these things are value laden in really spatial ways, those are not the thoughts that emerge. The thoughts are
sort of
quite to the contrary, and the rural becomes understood as backward precisely because the assumption is that people can't be out loud and proud in these places, rather than maybe what it means to be out loud and proud looks different across different places.
When you said that they felt very supportive, does that assume that they are out, whatever that means, in a rural area?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting question, because most of the people who I interviewed, regardless of how they answered the question, are you out, which is a question that I asked people, do you consider yourself to be out? no matter what they said in terms of the answer, yes or no, or something else entirely, throughout the course of the interview, they also told stories that contradicted that answer. So in part, this is, I think, precisely because of particular characteristics of rurality itself, including that people know things about people in rural places without ever having to be told them by the person in question. So people can know that you are LGBTQ and you don't even ever have to really say it. So then by this account, are you out or are you not out if you actually haven't come out, but everybody knows?
You tell a story in some of your writings about how a lot of women especially, they'll highlight their connection to family, connection to the farm, connection to work, connection to, you know, the community as sort of the way they feel supportive or the way they actually connect with other people.
Yeah, this is a good example. One of the questions that I asked interviewees was, do you feel like you have a gay community? And one of the interviewees answered, yes, but they're all straight. And this is a radically different understanding of gay community than typically circulates. And it's an understanding of community that is defined by people who support you rather than necessarily people who you see as like you. And I thought that was a really instructive moment for me in doing these interviews because it flips all kinds of assumptions about identity and community and visibility on their head and makes us question what these terms mean and how perhaps we haven't been critically attuned enough to just how different meanings can be of these words and how that influences people's lives in really material ways.
Is this a recent phenomenon, what you're talking about?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm not a historian, and this isn't really, my work isn't historical in this manner. So I'm not doing a kind of historical analysis that could track these kinds of changes. I do think that it's interesting in this moment that when I asked people if they'd experienced homophobia, most people said no, or that even if they had experienced homophobia, they also had experienced just as much support or more support. But for the most part, people expressed that they didn't really experience homophobia, but they also pointed out that they felt like they had experienced a lot of sexism in their lives. So this isn't to say that, again, there are no problems, but that perhaps this is a reflection of some of the contemporary gay rights strategies that many queer theorists are critical of, and that is precisely producing LGBTQ people as just like everybody else, as normal, as people who are without these kinds of subversive or marginalized culture that has historically been part, really, really central to the development of and maintenance of LGBTQ communities. So with some of the push to incorporate LGBTQ people into mainstream institutions such as marriage and the military, one of the results of this is that gay people have been produced as just like everybody else.
What does that mean, produced like everybody else?
It means that rather than considering ourselves to be different from everybody else and to operate in a way where we create these kind of gay subcultural spaces that run counter to dominant ways of being, now LGBTQ people have been folded into precisely what is imagined as a good person. So there are, of course, benefits to this, and a lot of queer theorists have focused on the real drawbacks of this and the fact that this the resulting decline in some ways or shifts in LGBTQ community formations.
I've sort of talked about this, but I want to get to that whole idea in urban areas of being, you have to declare, you have to be loud and proud, to put it simply. I guess having grown up in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, in rural areas, you don't try to stand out. You try to help other people. You're part of one big community, right? Is that related to why you wouldn't stand up and say, I'm different from you?
Yeah, exactly. So Mary Gray is another rural queer studies scholar, and she makes precisely this point that in a lot of places, especially in urban gay communities, one of the functions of coming out is to produce oneself as different. And in rural places, that's the ethos of the rural functions in a different manner. And people want to support one another. They want to be seen as like one another in some ways. And of course, this influences then how people articulate or don't articulate their sexuality. And I think that that's important. But the other thing here that I want to make really clear is that I don't see that as somehow being closeted or as LGBTQ people in rural places somehow being more regressive or anachronistic than urban LGBTQ people. What I'm trying to say is that outness itself, that visibility itself, that what gay community and what gay identity mean, that these are really context-specific ideas. And rather than discussing these things with all of the complexity that they require, the assumption is instead that the ways that it's being done in urban places are somehow indicative of progress and all that's right with the world, essentially.
Does that mean possibly those in urban areas, to keep it simple, could learn something from how people live in rural areas and how they adapt and how they just live their lives?
Yeah, I think that's precisely it. And I'm not at all suggesting that people in urban areas should take the approaches that those in rural areas are taking, but rather asking people to think about why it is that we automatically assume that life for LGBTQ people in rural areas is defined through the lens of homophobia and violence and fear, and what are the ramifications of producing the rural in this way, and how does this actually let off the hook LGBTQ people in urban places from thinking about ongoing social issues in urban places. Interestingly, of course, the rural gets positioned as this really homophobic, violent place. And there's a scholar who writes about this and has said that actually there are more homophobic hate crimes in urban places than there are in rural places because of the ways in which hate crimes are typically rooted in anonymity. And there isn't that kind of anonymity in rural places. So just that one example, I think, pushes us to think a little bit more critically about how certain spaces get produced as homophobic and certain spaces get produced as liberated.
Well, Carly Thompson, it's great to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, John. It was really a pleasure.